Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's good to have you here with us. It's November 1st when we're recording this, so hopefully you had a lovely All Hallows Eve or Halloween, whether you got kids, whether you got grandkids, whether you went out trick-or-treating or didn't, whether you just sat on the couch and watched the World Series demolition of the Arizona Diamondbacks, whatever you did with your time, hopefully it was great. Today's All Saints Day. Tomorrow's All Souls Day. So our kids had a delayed 2-hour opening so everyone can go trick-or-treating and, you know, not have to worry about that the next day, which is a very nice idea in concept. And then you execute it at a Catholic school where my kids go, and All Saints Day is a day of holy obligation, which basically means you're supposed to be at church that day, and they have Mass at 10 a.m. School starts at 10:15 that day, so that was a little bit of a CF. But nevertheless, we have plenty to talk about this week. We've got a guest for you, Scott Kim from PXG. He's their LPGA Tour manager. We talked yesterday, had a good conversation about fitting players at the highest level for PXG equipment, specifically about Celine Boutier, who has had a tremendous, tremendous year in golf. She's the number one player in the world. She's been playing great on the LPGA, now has 4 wins. She won a marathon 9-hole playoff in her last tournament in Malaysia over Taya Titikun. She's won a major this year. I mean, she has really established herself as one of the best players on the planet, and she plays PXG. And Scott offers a very interesting insight into some of the changes in her scoring capability are because of an equipment change that she was reluctant to make. So we had a good, interesting conversation about that. And then Megan Kang broke through this year, the CPKC Women's Open for her first LPGA Tour win. And then obviously was on the Solheim Cup team, so was Celine Boutier for Europe, and that she's playing PXG equipment as well. So Scott joined me to talk for, it'll be the back 15 minutes of the show this week. So I want to start with a story from Adam Shupak of Golf Week. Adam's a friend of mine, good guy, good reporter, has good sources, every once in a while comes up with some really cool stories, and he's pretty well connected to the Honda Classic tournament. So I'm not sure who his source is or who he knows there, but he's also connected with the tour and in other ways, personal ways. But nevertheless, he came out with a story, I think it was this morning. It might have been from yesterday, but I think it was this morning. And it was a story about the sponsorship of the former Honda Classic. So the Honda Classic had, up until the end of this season, the end of this FedEx Cup season, had the event with the longest continuously running sponsor, Honda. And they have been in there for the better part of, 40 years. And then they kind of walked away. That was enough for them. And the reason for that, there were kind of multiple reasons for that. One, The halcyon days were long gone. You know, it's been a decade since the Honda Classic was one of the biggest tournaments on the PGA Tour, because a lot of players who live in the Palm Beach area, and a lot of pros do, they patronized the tournament because it was a hometown thing. So like 2012, 2013, 2014, went back when Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods played the event regularly, it was the bee's knees, man. I mean, Jack Nicklaus got installed as kind of the host of the event a little bit before that and started kind of bringing in a little bit better player. And then Tiger moving down that way to Jupiter Island, that brought him to the tournament, that brought better players. And like I said, for a 3 or 4 year window, the tournament was big, real big, and very, very enjoyable at PGA National. And then the schedule started to change, and they brought in the WGC in Mexico, and they tried to find a way to bridge the gap between the West Coast swing and the Florida swing, which the Honda Classic was typically a kickoff to. And that didn't work out very well because players went and took the guaranteed money in Mexico City, and most of them didn't come back to go play in the Honda Classic. And that was kind of the beginning of the end. And this year, there were only 5 top 50 players in the field in a location where there are a bunch of them. It's just overflowing with great players in that part of Florida. So Honda probably was not particularly happy about that, having gone from an event with a competitive purse relative to the PGA Tour at the time and a great field to a purse that wasn't particularly competitive in the world of signature elevated designated events, and also a not so great field. And I think one of the quotes from Adam's story is very good. It's from someone I think connected to the tournament. You can't keep telling someone you're feeding them steak when you're feeding them corn dogs, or something, or asking them to pay for a steak when you're feeding them corn dogs, or something like that. Like, I thought that was very apropos of the situation. So Honda's like, yeah, you know, we'll come back to the tour, but what's the price tag going to be? And the tour played hardball, and they said, oh, well, we want $15 million a year. You know, a lot of that goes to the purse, so they want somewhere in the area of, you know, a $9 to $10 million purse, probably. And Honda said, we are willing to go up to $13 million a year. That's our number. And the tour said, no. $2 million difference. And the reason that $2 million difference was a big deal to the tour, because they thought they had multiple sponsors in the Rolodex that would take this spot. And they did at the time. But when Honda walked away, they said they went to a couple of different potential sponsors. One was T-Mobile, apparently, according to Adam's reporting. And they were ready to sign the dotted line. They were going to get involved. And then AT&T came calling and said, hey, you know, we're the official telecommunications partner of the PGA Tour. Wouldn't be so great if our biggest rival at the moment, because T-Mobile is just clawing away market share, or at least has been for 4 or 5 years, starting to go the other way again, but clawing away market share. Wouldn't be great if they were a sponsor of the PGA Tour, given that we're a longtime sponsor. We sponsor multiple tournaments at the moment when they were the Byron Nelson sponsor. And, oh, yeah, we're going to be a sponsor of a signature event next year. So don't put T-Mobile in there. So T-Mobile, sorry, guys, can't have you. Carrier. Carrier makes heating and ventilation equipment, stuff like that, HVAC equipment. And they wanted to be a sponsor. And the PGA Tour said, okay, we'd love to have you. And Carrier said, on one condition, if we can be a signature event. And the PGA Tour said, can't do that. We've already got our signature events. We're not adding any more. And Carrier said, no, thank you. Then we're out. We're only going to get into this if we can get good players and we can get a great field. So that they walked away. So per Adam's reporting, the situation now stands where two things are about to happen. One, the PGA Tour is taking over management and ownership of the tournament. It's going to be their whole deal. This used to be run as kind of part of a group with IMG and in its own company. PGA Tour told the employees of the tournament they will become tour employees. And once that happens, then the next thing happens, which will be Cognizant, will, at least per Adam's reporting, will be brought in as the sponsor of the Honda Classic. So whether it be the Cognizant Classic, the Cognizant Championship, I don't know. We'll find all that out, and those words don't really mean a whole lot. But Cognizant sounds like they're going to be the sponsor for this tournament for probably 3 to 5 years. And per Adam's reporting, they will get a discount in year one because they are kind of the hero sponsor. They're coming in. It kind of happened with Torrey Pines when Farmers Insurance came in and took over for Buick. And Farmers, which is part of a bigger family that includes Zurich, they got a big, big discount to be a sponsor that first year because they didn't have a lot of signage or a lot of time to be the sponsor before they just kind of got announced as the savior of it all. So the same thing's going to happen here because the tournament's already been announced for next year as like the Classic at Palm Beach or the Palm Beach Classic, whatever it is. A generic name without a title sponsor. So now that they're going to come in and probably be the title sponsor, and I'm assuming this will get closed out in the next couple weeks, then they won't be the sponsor since last March. They'll be the sponsor for half the period. So they'll probably get something like a 50 to 65% discount being the sponsor for year one. And then year two, three, whatever, they'll pay full freight, which I assume is, again, in that $15 million range that Honda balked at and the tour wanted. And that'll guarantee some tournament purse increases. The tour will handle the additional cost of underwriting the tournament that they don't get from Cognizant. And they will also ask some of the other tournaments which have reserve money to pay just a couple, you know, couple million dollars from their collective reserves to help underwrite the tournament for 1 year, for 2024. And this is going to be one of those interesting experiments because it'll be a kind of a first of its kind, a new sponsor coming in to take over a regular event. And we don't know what the quality of fields are going to look like next year for regular events, because we don't have this model. We've had this signature event system, the designated event system, this year. But next year, when they become signature events, and the events in between signature events determine who plays in the next one, will there be more players, more guys on the fringe of qualifying for these events in the top 50, 75, 95 in the world kind of deal, that will play because they want to make sure they get a spot in the next one? I don't know. I really don't know. I'm very curious about all that. I'm sure Cognizant is too, because they're already a sponsor on the LPGA. They sponsor the Founders Cup. They've been a great sponsor. The event is in New Jersey. They've had some bad luck on weather a couple of years, but they've been a good sponsor of the LPGA. And that's a system where their purse of about $3 million is huge. I mean, it's a trend-setting purse. On the PGA Tour, $3 million doesn't even get you an Oppo event. It's like $4 million now. That's like the Myrtle Beach Classic. So, very curious how Cognizant will feel about being a PGA Tour sponsor versus an LPGA Tour sponsor. What they get for it, the value they get, the TV ratings they get. The ratings will be better, right? That's just kind of how it works. Even the best watched LPGA regular events draw in like the 400,000 people range. On the LPGA or the PGA Tour on the weekend, it's like 2 million for an event like this. So you're looking at 4 to 5x the audience, but you're also looking at 4 to 5x the money. So what do you get for that? See how that works. I think it's an interesting experiment. But the other part of the story from Adam that I thought was interesting and wanted to talk about a little bit more was this notion of the PGA Tour operating as a for-profit in some fashion in the future. Because as part of this deal, the PGA Tour taking over the management of this tournament, this is also an experiment. Because if they go into a world where they own tournaments and they have that ownership as a for-profit, how will they be able to deliver on their 501c3 membership organization goals? And how will they be able to use tournament management as nonprofit organizations themselves effectively? Because if you have some tournament, you know, their tournament management stuff, they have a bunch of tournament management stuff that they run, that PGA Tour does themselves, their bigger events, they handle and do themselves. But they come with donations to charity. And so now you're taking a tournament that has been run as a 501c3 and has generated millions of dollars through different campaigns each and every year for charity, particularly the Nicholas Children's Hospital in Florida. That's why Nicholas came the host. And now the PGA Tour is saying, well, we'll give you guaranteed $2.5 million a year donation from the tournament. And then we'll add on, you know, whatever the other initiatives are, the birdies for the Play Yellow, you know, those types of things that they do at the event with different sponsors or other activations that lead to charitable donations. What will that look like? I think that's one key piece of this. And I think it's something we haven't really talked about very much in all of this, you know, all of the news around June 6th and going to a for-profit situation. What does charitable giving look like in that world? Do they just kind of say, all right, we're stroking a check and here's what it's for, and everything else they keep in-house? How will tournament management change as well? Because if they have to be a for-profit, will they be able to attract the same number, volume of volunteer help to run these events? I mean, hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, volunteer per PGA Tour event to help, whether that's marshaling, whether that's food service, whether that's ticket taking, whether that's answering questions, holding up signs, directing people where to go, parking people, all kinds of stuff. It's all volunteer. And if the PGA Tour goes to a for-profit model, how are they going to, in good conscience, ask people to pay for that right, because a lot of people do pay to volunteer. They pay for the shirt that they get. They pay in some part for the food that they get. So you're basically paying to go, but you're getting slightly better access. So how will the market respond to that? How will people who are long-time PGA Tour volunteers go and continue to be volunteers to their events if they feel the PGA Tour is running effectively as a for-profit and that the work that they're doing isn't really going to lead to more donations to charity? Will the value proposition change? Will they go and say, okay, if you agree to volunteer and you pay, we will give all the money that comes in from the volunteers to charity. That'll be our charitable giving. You know, the 2,000 of you who do that, and then we'll do some other charitable component to it as well. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer to that is, but I think it's a very interesting question that has to be asked, because golf at a professional level has relied on volunteer help, paying help, not volunteer help, paying help for a long time. You pay for your shirt. You pay for good chunk of what you're doing. You're paying to do a job. And in exchange, yes, you get access inside the ropes in some cases to some of the best views in golf, to some of the best golfers in the world. And you get to watch them play up close in person. But if you're doing the parking lot, you don't get that benefit. So if you're asking someone to come in and pay to volunteer to work the parking lot, you can lose me with that. And I think there are going to be a lot of people who say that as well, if this is a for-profit entity. So at that point, do they have to hire people as hourly workers? Would they go and say, okay, well, we'll give you $15 an hour, $20 an hour in terms of wage to be a volunteer or someone, you know, who's a spotter, someone who's a marshal, those types of things? Would they say, okay, well, we will give you $450, I'm just making up numbers, $450 in our online pro shop or to the tournament pro shop and go get merch from us in exchange for doing this? I think the value proposition is going to change. I think it's a very good point, and I'm very curious what that means going forward, but it's something we haven't talked about at all because we're so worried about everything else that comes up, and it's one of those things that it's probably one of those things in the discussions, frankly, between the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, the PGA Tour, and the DP World Tour, what that looks like, because that volunteer base is huge on the PGA Tour and really has a big impact on their charitable giving and the bottom line of the organization, because they don't have to pay for that help. So what will that mean moving forward? I don't know, but it's an interesting conversation. We'll go take a break. We'll be back right after this. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to AugustaPreciousMetals.com. All right, welcome back to the show. Good to have you with us today for this week's program. Second story or second topic I want to talk about, and then we'll get to Scott Kim from PXG in our final segment this week, is a story that came out last week, and it was a bit of a news dump from the PGA Tour. And the announcement through a press release was that two players on the Korn Ferry Tour, Jake Stiano and Vince India, were given multiple-month suspensions by the PGA Tour, those guys play on the Korn Ferry Tour, for betting on golf events. And the PGA Tour has something what's called the PGA Tour's Integrity Program. It's usually managed in concert with a company called Genius Sports, which has come along in the advent of sports betting, that they kind of do the sleuth working for these major sports tours to make sure their players aren't violating the rules of their integrity programs. So making sure they're not betting on themselves or tournaments in which they compete, or taking information that they would be privy to that other people wouldn't be, and distributing that to others who might be covered under this policy, betting on it, trying to profit on it. And so the PGA Tour made this announcement and said, hey, we're suspending Vince India for 6 months, and we're suspending Jake Stayano for 3 months. And those suspensions were effective at different points in September. So Jake Stayano's would end the day before the final stage of Q School. So like December 10th. And Vince India's basically ends next March. He got the longer suspension. They didn't really explain what the players bet on. But under the integrity program, there are a bunch of different things you can't do. And the people who are covered under the policy can't do. So you can't bet on any professional golf tournament. Any. Not ones under the PGA Tour umbrella. Not ones Olympic golf. Not DP World Tour. Not LPGA. You cannot bet on a sanctioned professional golf tournament that could be covered under a sports book. Can't do it. You also have to put in your honest effort. Your best effort. And that's a clause in every sports integrity program. So you can't say, all right, I'm going to miss this green here on this hole so that someone could win a bet. Because we have those bets. And those bets are coming bigger and bigger deal. I mean, the PGA Tour and FanDuel really leaned into this a lot at the end of the season for the FedEx Cup. We're like, well, now you can bet on which person's closest to the hole on a par three. Well, that's an outcome that is very easy to alter and not look all that suspect in a one hole or one shot situation. So you could alter those types of outcomes and still not alter the outcome of the tournament too much. Say, okay, well, I'm going to miss this green on the par three, so my friend who bet $2,500 and my opponent, my other partner, hits the green closer, they win. You could do that. That is not very hard to do for a professional. I mean, it'd be harder for us as amateurs to do because we can't control the golf ball very well. But for the professional golfer, no, that's not hard to do. And it's pretty easy to cover up. Then you just get up and down for par, go, hit a bad shot. It goes on like that. And there are other pieces of this that are part of the integrity program. But PGA Tour was explicit and said these guys bet on golf, wasn't betting on a tournament which they were competing, which would have been an even bigger no-no. And here's the suspension. So that's all they kind of say. But as Ryan French at Monday Q Info pointed out, he likens this more to not a 3 month or 6 month suspension, but more to a year suspension. And he says that because both of these players, Stayano and India, who were eliminated from the Korn Ferry Tour finals at different stages, after the first stage or the second stage, India at the second stage, Stayano at the first. Once they were eliminated, then they were suspended. And Stayano was eliminated and suspended before the next tournament, the day before the next tournament. India was suspended the day after that tournament because he didn't get through the second level. So now they're both out 6 and 3 months, right? And Tour doesn't explain why. But what they do know is they can't go to Q School because that is a PGA Tour sanctioned event, which means they can't go to the second stage of Q School to try to get to the final stage of Q School. And if they can't get to the final stage of Q School, it doesn't matter when your suspension ends for your Jake Stayano. He's not playing final stage of Q School because he can't get through the second stage. And for Vince India, that means he can't get through the Q School. That means he also can't play the early portion of the season, so you're putting him further behind the eight ball. And by the way, at Korn Ferry Tour Q School, not only are 5 PGA Tour cards on the line, but guaranteed starts on the Korn Ferry Tour on the line. So, neither of them can get guaranteed starts, which means they start next year having to go Monday qualify. And the Monday qualifiers for the Korn Ferry Tour, they offer more spots, 8, but they are extremely difficult because golf courses are set up in a way that experience does not particularly matter. A player who just has a hot day, and there are thousands of them out there in the world, could have a hot day, get the 8 spots, and you're screwed. You got to shoot like 65 to get through these Korn Ferry Tour qualifiers. And also, there's not a lot of protection for players who get through the Monday qualifiers. So they've been sentenced not to a year-long suspension. Ryan's view, I think, is a little bit, Ryan French's view, is a little bit too dour. But they are suspended effectively for more than the time of period they're suspended. Right? They're definitely suspended from the PGA Tour or accessing the PGA Tour through Q School. They're suspended through guaranteed access to the Korn Ferry Tour, through Q school. Now they're in a difficult situation. So what did they do that was such an egregious violation of the policy? Well, Jake Stiano went on Ryan French's podcast called Any Given Monday. Strongly urge you to support him. He is doing a great job. He just does a great job with content. He's a good guy. He has a membership available for $50 a year. We have one too. Honestly, if you're going to pick between the two today, I would want you to pick his, because he is working really hard. He's doing good stuff, making good content, and making it in this world of golf media or being independent media is extremely difficult. So check him out, MondayQInfo.com, if you'd like to support him. But Jake Stiano went on his podcast, which is called Any Given Monday, and explained what he did and how he got caught. And he said he wagered $116.20 on four separate golf wagers in 2021. One of the wagers, he says, was on Bryson DeChambeau to make a birdie on a particular hole during a PGA Tour event. And then the other three wagers were related to the 2021 version of the match, which was the 12-hole match at the Wynn between Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. And said effectively, you know, I'm facing this suspension for a little over $100 worth of bets. Which, yes, that is true. But you also broke the policy. And you knew what the policy was. And if you were only betting $100, what the heck were you doing betting it? Because you know what the penalty could be if you get caught. If you get caught, then that means you could potentially face sanction. You could face suspension. Now, there are a bunch of different punishment options available. You could force someone to go to counseling. You could slap them on the wrist. You could fine them. You could do different things. But the tour gets to decide that. As soon as you violate this policy, you put yourself in the tour's hands, whether they want to show you mercy or make an example of you or something in between. So why would you do it for $100-some-odd of bets? It doesn't make any sense. The money that you make back on any of those bets, and I'm sure they weren't particularly lucrative, is max a couple hundred bucks. And instead, if you get caught, you deny yourself access to, if you can't get through PGA Tour Q School or get a PGA Tour card, like $500 million of purse money. What are you doing? Why would you do that? On the other hand, I also understand where he's coming from, where he goes, well, I'm not betting that much, but you violated the policy. So I've been kind of struggling with this idea of the middle ground, but that the tour didn't explain more about what Jake did in terms of betting. I think it miffed him. He said to Ryan French, quote, obviously the press release was a little vague. I just wanted to at least get it out there that, hey, this was 2 years ago. I was 24, 25 at the time, and I made a mistake, end quote. And he explained how the PGA Tour found it out. They, I guess, went through Genius Sports, and they said, you know, we got to look through all of your information, and we'll go and find out if you made these bets. And they did. They popped them, and I guess Jay Monahan said, hey, we got you. We're going to suspend you. Here's the deal. And that's it. But it would have been helpful, I think. I agree it would have been helpful for the tour to say, look, this wasn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. I mean, I bet $100 on the outcome of an NFL game over the weekend. just one game. And I tend to bet a little bit more than the average human being, not in terms of frequency, but in terms of amount. So to me, a total of $100 of wagers is not a lot, but for someone who maybe bets a dollar or less at a time, that is a lot. So what makes it relatively worse or better? I really don't know that. And I'm not sure about that. And Stiano did say that he believed that his wagering on the match, being an exhibition match, didn't violate PGA Tour policy. That's a bad read. That's why you read the policy, because that says any sanctioned golf event, basically. And the PGA Tour sanctioned the event. It gave these guys releases to compete in it. Tiger and Phil have talked repeatedly about especially Phil, about having to pay a licensing fee to the tour to allow them to be able to do these matches. So that was all there the whole time. That wasn't a surprise. Then you have Vince India, and he went on and posted on social media and explained on X what happened.
He said, quote, I have been truly blessed to be able to pursue a career in professional sports. It's an absolute privilege to play this game for a living. To that end, I am deeply ashamed that my behavior and poor decisions put my dream in jeopardy. I regret them every day. I want to apologize to the tour for knowingly violating the integrity program. I'm sorry to all my friends, family, coaches, sponsors, and anyone who has supported me throughout my career. I'm confident I will grow from this. It's an opportunity to continue to tackle the heart of my problems. I'm going to put more hours than ever into my body and mind this offseason and ultimately come out a better person and player. I'm looking forward to 2024, continuing my goal to play golf at the highest level. So he didn't really explain the wagering, like what it was or what got him popped. So that's a little bit different than Jake, but it feels like Vince is indicating he knew he was breaking the rules when he did this. That whatever he bet on or however often he bet, and it could have been one bet, it could have been 100 bets, probably was more money and more frequent, is my guess, than what Jake did, because otherwise you would give him the same suspension. So my guess is they uncovered a little bit more betting, a little bit more purposeful stuff, maybe a little bit closer to the PGA Tour than an exhibition, and that's why they went with the six-month suspension. It's a strange world in which we live right now in terms of sports media, in terms of athletes, because every sport has basically embraced sports betting in some fashion because of the money associated with it in terms of sponsorship. And I'm completely fine with sports betting. I do it. I'm okay with it. I understand that it can cause problems, and I'm fully accepting of that argument. I completely understand where you're coming from. If you're on that side of things, I get you. But I think one of the many challenges involved in regulating legalized sports betting is integrity. And I talked about it a little bit ago. We are now at a point where you can bet on the results of an individual shot in golf. And if you can do that, if I can bet on that, then the golfer can also flub it, and they could very easily be compromised and not get caught down to that granular of a level over the course of a round or a long time. Yeah, you'd figure it out. They have ways of figuring it out in tennis, where like low level tennis, there's a lot of accusations about match fixing and players who don't earn a lot of money being on the take from big sports betting operations that put a whole heck of a lot of money in these low-level matches that no one watches. That generates a lot of attention, and rightfully so. Why would someone bet $10,000 on the result of a WTA 100 match or a challenger match? Who cares? Why would that be possible? That'd be really weird. But at the PGA Tour level, if you were able to compromise somebody, or you could be compromised to the benefit of your friends or family or whoever, to bet on the results of an individual shot and go, okay, well, if you're a better player, you can go and say, well, I know I'm probably going to be covered by the live betting. So on the fifth hole, I'm going to miss the green on purpose. Just bet against me. And you might not make a whole lot of money off of it, but if you can do it a bunch of times, you can make a pretty substantial amount. Not enough to make it worth it, I don't think. Because of the amount of money available on the PGA Tour, if you got caught, it would just be a disaster for everybody involved. But that kind of compromising is possible. Not so much on like the Korn Ferry Tour or a tour like that, because the amount of people who bet on that tour is very, very small. And we talked about this on, I think, my sports betting show, my golf betting show called The Press. But for the LIV event, the final LIV event in a couple weeks ago in Miami in South Florida, the Superbook, the Westgate Superbook, which is one of the most influential sports books in the world, they post lines and they move markets. They set markets. They are huge. They're a big deal. They put out lines for the team championship. Like, you could pick a team to win the team championship on LIV. They got exactly one ticket. One ticket on that event. One person showed up and bet on one team. Or maybe multiple teams. I don't know. But one ticket. That's terrible. That doesn't, by comparison, the PGA Tour Champions event got 13. Also very low, right? But 13 times live, that's, I guess, pretty good. But that's not a lot of bets. So those things would look particularly suspect. They took away, they had been posting Korn Ferry Tour odds, and they weren't getting much action. So they don't even do them anymore. So the only place you could really be able to do this on the PGA Tour, and I guess the threat of being able to be suspended and taken away from that large prize pool of the money is enough to convince no one to do this, I think. But then still you have players in the NFL who get suspended for betting on football or betting in the team facility, or breaking the rules, basic rules. So I think all of this underscores the absolute importance of being able to control yourself, being able to follow and understand a policy, and knowing what the ramifications of that are. And they are especially huge now in golf because there isn't much juice to be squeezed from that lemon. There just isn't much in comparison to all of them going rotten instantly if you're found out. I thought it was an interesting topic. I know not everyone's into sports betting, but it is an interesting world in which we live right now, and I figured that was worth the discussion. We'll go and take a break. We'll be right back after this. All right, one final segment this week. It's good to have you here with us. Next week, we'll continue to do shows. We have a couple events on the PGA Tour and the major tours. Worldwide Technology Championship at El Cardinal at Diamante, which is Tiger Woods' design. That'll be a move for the event from El Chameleon, which was a Greg Norman design. See how that goes. The LPGAs in Japan, the Toto Japan Classic. They make lovely toilets, apparently. Gemma Drybura is the defending champion there. It's their last event of the Fall Asian Swing before they come back for the final two events in the U.S. PGA Tour Champions is playing this week. Timber Tech Championship, second playoff event. Steve Stricker's already won the FedEx, or not the FedEx Cup, the Charles Schwab Cup. No one can catch him, so he's not playing in this event, but everyone's playing for second place in that $2.1 million bonus pool. So they've got this event and one more, which will be the Charles Schwab Cup Championship, 36 players. And then the DP World Tour is off this week. They've got two final events. The top 60 available players plus six invitations for the Nedbank Golf Challenge in South Africa. And then the top 50 available players in the DP World Tour Championship. That'll close the season. And then we'll talk a little bit about the coming weeks, the other two PGA Tour events, the Butterfield Bermuda Championship, the RSM Classic. That'll end that tour for the year. And we'll probably have a couple other things to talk about here and there, but we'll might do a show in like the first week of December and then shut it down for the year. All right. Scheduling stuff aside, our guest for this week is Scott Kim. He is the LPGA Tour Manager for PXG Parsons Extreme Golf. We got him on to kind of talk about some new irons from the brand 0317T irons, which they have very well separated their Gen 6 irons, which are kind of the big bell curve for everybody, a couple of different models that are longer, hit higher, the PXG versus this 0317 line that is really clearly defined. These are for better players. This is technology that's designed to help better players still be forgiving, but still give them what they want in terms of workability and shot shape and preference and look and all those types of things. So I wanted to talk to Scott about those new clubs. Also, the great year Celine Boutier has had in the LPGA, Megan Kang on the LPGA breaking through, and what I think we can learn as amateur golfers going to get fit, and whether it's for PXG or anything else, and still seeing that the best players in the world like Celine Boutier may be resistant to change, but when they make a change that the data suggests is a good one, a lot of good things can happen. So here's our conversation with Scott Kim. Scott Kim joins us. He is the LPGA Tour Manager for PXG. And he's going to talk with us about the new 0317T irons. Scott, first, thanks for being on with us. It's been a heck of a year for PXG on the LPGA. So let's talk about that real quick and what that's meant to the brand.
Yeah, women's golf has always been kind of a big thing at PXG. And, we've tried to support women's golf as much as possible. So, it's been a great year for us. Megan Kang got her first win. And Celine Boutier having a phenomenal year, and we're not done yet. Celine having four wins this season, it's been really incredible for us at PXG, and it's just been probably a good I would say good way of kind of showing like how good like these products are, and you know how it's helped these women play their best.
Celine's won in 4 different countries. She's won a major. She's got a pretty good shot at being player of the year. She's number one in the world. What has it been like working with her as she's kind of had this incredible ascendancy?
You know, working with Celine is incredible. She's just a tremendous ball striker, incredibly hard worker. And it's just been a pleasure working with her, you know, because Celine is one of those players that really knows what she wants. And, you know, just trying to like kind of fine tune the irons and drivers, just trying to like kind of fit kind of the particular shot shape, shot window she's looking for. It's made it really easy to help her kind of get into the clubs that make her play her best.
Feels like every pro kind of has it, just like every golfer kind of has their different things they're looking for and how they look for them. And when they're evaluating equipment, how does Celine do that? And what is she looking for in particular when she's trying to evaluate, let's say for the sake of this conversation, irons?
You know, like one of the big changes we made 2 years ago is that, you know, Celine was using a steel shaft in her PXG irons. And when I started in this role, you know, one of the first things I kind of asked her is like, you know, how do you like your irons? And, you know, what can we do differently that would make you, you know, that you would feel like it would help you play a little bit better? And, you know, one of the things Celine struggled with a couple of years ago is like getting the ball higher up in the air, like in order to stop the ball a little bit faster on firmer greens and kind of back pin positions, front pin positions. And so, you know, we looked into a couple different shaft options that kind of complemented our irons well. And, you know, since that change, her greens in regulation went from being around probably 60th or 70th on tour to now in the last few years, she's consistently been in the top 15. And so it's been a big change for her. And I think it's one of the reasons why she has so many top 10s in addition to all the wins she's had this year. It's just made her a much more consistent player and just keeps her in contention like so many weeks of the year.
Can you give us a good sense of the feedback on the 0317T irons and how they kind of fit into the staff that you're dealing with in terms of their preferences as an elite player and what they might kind of lean toward one way or the other before the 0317Ts came out?
You know, so like, you know, we came out with our 0317ST irons and then we came out with our 0317CB irons, and like the new 0317T irons is just like a nice complement to like this kind of player, like this really tour oriented type of set. It uses our platform technologies, our hollow body design that we're really known for, but kind of utilizing our kind of new S-Core technology in addition to our kind of precision weight technology to really kind of dial in, look and feel, but also, you know, the forgiveness that our irons are kind of known for. And it allows us to kind of blend the set really well with like the ST irons if somebody's looking for a little bit more forgiveness in the long irons. But it is also just a little bit more forgiving of a set than the CBs and the STs, but it still maintains kind of the workability, distance control that elite level players are kind of looking for.
So how do players kind of tend to take their makeup of a set? Do they tend to break it between, you know, 3-3 and 3, 2-3, 2? I mean, how do they kind of tend to break up their sets, or do a lot of players just kind of tend to stay in one family?
You know, so with some players, like I've seen, we've had a couple players utilize like the tee throughout the kind of the entire set, you know, 5 through pitching wedge. We've also had some players utilize the tees and the short irons and still using our kind of flagship Gen 6P irons and like kind of the long irons if they're looking for a little bit higher launch. But, you know, one of the nice things about the T-Iron, it utilizes our technology. So our kind of hollow body design, but while maintaining distance control. So it's been a really good it's been really good in kind of short irons for some players just to be able to get a little bit more distance, but still kind of maintain that distance control that they look for playing on like, some of these really firm greens out on the LPGA Tour.
I think a lot of us amateurs probably think about our clubs in, you know, 10, 15 yardish yard gaps, mm-hmm. and try to kind of play to those. Do top players, professionals, think about those scoring irons even a little bit tighter range than those 10 to 15 yards than, you know, maybe us who are just trying to hit the green?
I would say like in general, a lot of these players are really looking for like kind of really consistent gap, like really, really consistent gaps in like in their short irons, because that's where they're trying to get it close, give themselves birdie opportunities. That's I think that's kind of a I looking for like kind of just consistent gapping like through the entire set is always is always something that play like elite level players and then regular golfers are looking for too. But the tee is kind of a a great iron to like kind of maintain that distance consistency.
In terms of kind of the bell curve of not just professional golfers, but let's get to the broader population of golfer. Where do most golfers kind of fit in the lineup of PXG irons and in terms of maybe either combo sets or just kind of general family?
So like we like PXG, we're always we make golf clubs for the average golfer as well as like the elite level golfer. A lot of amateur golfers will probably fit really well into our flagship irons like the Gen 6P and the Gen 6 XP line. But for better players like the 0317T and the CB and the STs, like those are really kind of made for a little bit kind of a higher level golfer, a little bit better ball striker, one that's a player that's looking for maybe a little bit more workability than maybe like the Gen 6P or XP, which are really kind of designed to be forgiving and straight versus like the 0317 line, which is really meant for like kind of precision distance control and kind of workability. The T iron just provides just a little bit more forgiveness than the CB and our ST lines.
Feels like PXG has done a better job, in my estimation, of having a differentiation between kind of maybe this isn't the best way to put it, but general population lines versus better player lines. Is that have you found that that's kind of been a better case is how PXG comes to the market?
Yeah, we make golf clubs for every different type of golfer, and we have kind of irons that are best suited for players that maybe don't get to practice that often. They need a little bit more forgiveness, so that's where like kind of the P's and the XP's really shine. It's just a little bit more like more forgiving across the face, when even when you don't hit it that great. But the 0317 series, like it really kind of dials in someone that's kind of looking for kind of that elite level ball striker that is looking for like a little bit more distance control, workability, shot shaping capabilities, high, low, etc.
Just all of this kind of underscores the importance of getting fit for any player, whether you're Celine Boutier or whether you're 25, 36, 54 handicap, whatever that is for you. And that kind of leads into a question about how important it has been for the PXG brand to create these fitting studios that you've created and getting customers in to get properly fit across the board for PXG equipment.
Yeah, 100%. Whether you're Celine Boutier or you're, average Joe golfer that plays, occasionally on the weekends, it's really important to get fit. And that's one of the, one of the best things about PXG is that, we don't have an off the rack item. We make clubs specifically for each golfer. And that's why we have the experience of, working with our fitters like in studios, like at our various like store locations or, even with like, being able to consult with somebody over the phone, to try to kind of dial it in. But it really is important to get kind of to fit and go through that fitting process, just so that you're really kind of enhancing the things you do well and helping fix things, some of the things that you don't. So
And for tour players, I mean, they're used to being able to go through the paces and at their own pace and figure out exactly what they're looking for. But for someone who maybe hasn't been through that kind of fitting before, what can they expect when they go to a PXG fitting studio, and what are they going to learn about themselves in addition to how PXG equipment fits their game?
So when you come into a PXG store and you start consulting with like one of our master fitters, like in studio, they really pay attention to, what you've been using, what you like about your clubs, what you don't like about your clubs, and really kind of, and then they show you like, some of our like our kind of flagship technologies, what makes our clubs so good, and then really start dialing into lie angle, trying to make sure that your start line is correct, and like making sure that you get adequate spin and adequate peak height in terms of your shot so that you're getting your distance and stopping abilities onto the greens. you know, in, if you're looking at Woods, like just trying to make sure that your shot shape is like what you want it to be, you know, maybe we can help correct for a little bit of a slice that you might have. And, you know, just, you know, but all around, you know, it's, it, you know, the fitting process is really good at addressing a lot of the, issues that, you know, average golfers have. And, you know, the, our master fitters are just incredible at, you know, getting players dialed in and into clubs that really work best for them.
You mentioned this earlier at the top of the interview, and I thought it was pretty interesting, the move from steel to graphite for Celine and what that has kind of meant for her accuracy in terms of hitting greens and regulation. Are there some things that you've run into in working with professional golfers that maybe they haven't considered, but when they do it, even it, and it could be that very thing, shaft change, but are there other things that maybe even elite golfers don't necessarily consider or are reluctant to change that can net some really big results to improve their game?
You know, like I've worked with a lot of different golfers, not just like LPGA golfers, but elite college golfers. And, you know, sometimes you hear the, you hear the phrase, oh, well, I've used this shaft for years, you know, and, you know, it might get a player adjusted to a particular feel, but it may not be a shaft that's like well suited for that person. So, you know, if you have a hard time hitting a hot, like a ball high enough, you know, you might not want to use something that's real stout, like a, you know, like a project that's, let's say, you know, there's a lot, you know, especially on the LPGA tour, we're starting to see a lot more of these kind of really high performance graphites that like work really well at getting the ball up in the air, landing with a softer angle of descent, but maintaining good accuracy and stabilities to where, you know, you can still hit a lot more greens and not have that, you know, that fear of missing left or right.
I think that's one thing to kind of underscore, whether you're playing infrequently, but even if you play frequently, technology moves very quickly in this game.
Yes,
and so if something you think may have worked for you for 5 or 10 years could be better, or something else could be better than it pretty quickly. And you might get passed by if you're not willing to make that change.
You know, like I was saying, that there's been so many advances in, let's say, like graphite iron technology to where, you know, it's not a bad thing to play graphite. You know, there are a lot of benefits to being able to hit it, you know, hit it higher, hit it softer. A little bit of a better feel too, just, you know, but, you know, if you can kind of get over the, you know, get over, you know, having, I guess the idea of like, oh, I have to play steel, you know, in my irons, then, you know, you can really like see some big performance benefits.
All right, we'll get you out here on this. What has been your favorite moment so far in 2023 in your job?
You know, I cherish every win that we get on the LPGA tour, but one of the most satisfying things this year was to see Meghan Keane get her first LPGA tour win. I loved watching Celine get her first major in her home country of France. And, you know, working with both of them has been like super rewarding, and just being able to have the, you know, the privilege to work with such elite level golfers and helping them get the peak of the game is that's probably one of the best feelings about being the LPGA tour manager at PXG.
Scott, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it. Continued success for the brand, already a
thank
huge year.
Much.
And hopefully we can talk again soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Scott, for being on the show. Very much appreciated. Happy to have him with us. It was a fun conversation. Hopefully we can do it again. That's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll be back with another show next week. If you have any questions for me, shoot me a note, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Get me on Twitter, X, Threads, and Instagram at the handle Ryan Ballingy. Thanks so much for your support. We will be back next week. Talk to you then on the 19th Hole Golf Show.